Well, good evening, everyone, here from the far north, where you can see the difference between what is Arctic and what is temperate. But there's something about that that cold discipline that fits in with Capricorn energy. We're not there yet, but I mean, it is Capricorn energy, and it chastens you, you might say. I'm glad to see you all here. I was thinking, you know, who comes to these? And I was thinking, none but the brave, you know, comes to these searching webinars, where the facts, as discrete, definite, isolated facts, are not ready before you in any book, or at least you have to use your intuition. And instead of, you know, just talking about it, well, we do a lot of talking about it, of course, but instead of only talking about it, one has to have an experience. And then the experience may occur as a flash. And sometimes they call it, you know, the blinking of the dragon's eye. Very quick. Okay. And you have that experience. But the dragon, in this case, is a dragon of wisdom. And a master is called a lesser dragon of wisdom. In our solar system, the dragons of wisdom are the planetary gods. They are the planetary logoi. And our solar god is called a lion of cosmic will. Great name, isn't it? I mean, and, you know, think of it, our solar system is such a tremendous heart center within a still greater being. And you know, you're going to hear in the background a little bit, we're just trying to get this place together the way it should be, and the man who's helping us is leaving tomorrow morning early, so it looks like a late night and an early morning. And we'll start, of course, our ask programs on the morning schedule tomorrow at 5 a.m. GMT. So this is coming to terms with the dragon of wisdom, and can he keep his eyes open? And can we, who are tiny little parts of that great being, at least we are now, you know, ultimately, and this is the hard part, you know, we are the great being itself. And you have to appreciate that in a dualistic manner and without any inflation of your personality. You have to appreciate that we are very narrowed down, so to speak, and that's a choice of the great universal God to send forth emanations which get narrower and narrower and narrower and see less and see less and see less until it just stops, you know, because we don't have an infinite universe. We have a bounded universe. And our universe is bounded by the self perception of the universal deity. So, in other words, whatever... There's nothing in a universe beyond what the great God of the universe decides to perceive of himself, because that's all there is. Well, these are, you know, big metaphysical thoughts, and you might kind of wonder how they can fit with our everyday limited life within the great illusion. You know, the universe is, in a way, the great illusion. And we call that in the Sanskrit terms, the Maha, it means big, and Maya, which means illusion, the Maha Maya. And here we are forever, cyclically, coming in and out of the Maha Maya, and yet nothing ever changes. And that's, you know, you go to Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, and you go to page 284, 85, and there are statements there that are supposed to be sung on certain notes, and DK calls them trumpeted words, and they're older than the stanzas of Zian. So the ageless wisdom really is ageless. You know, it's been the method of withdrawing those who went forth into illusion, withdrawing them from illusion, and that's been going on forever. And I just want to say that if you don't know who you are, or none of us, if we don't know who we really are, we are in illusion. And when the real identity dawns upon us, then illusion ceases. The word illusion is used at many different levels, and sometimes it's quite a low level. It just has to do with doing things in not particularly an intelligent way within our normal life, and being misled by misinterpretation of the truth and all that. But if you go farther, this word illusion represents the great universe. And by the way, there's a movie. You know, I don't go to many movies, but I remember the ones I go to. And it's called Illusion. And it's, you know, Kirk Douglas, Spartacus, you may remember, is 102 years old now. Anyway, this was made back in the low-budget film in the early 2000s, and it's all about a man who manages to adjust the Akashic record when he sees what his life had been in the great movie house that follows your incarnation. When I was a kid, I used to dream about that all the time. I'm alone. I'm seeing a movie, and that movie is my life, and things were really strange. It all came from the past. So if you get a chance to see this film, Illusion, it's a highly, highly metaphysical movie, and I think it's something that you could recommend to your friends to get them on the beam, you know, so that they begin to appreciate what we are trying to do here. We can make it real easy right now. Just have a few moments of silence. And, you know, in the silence is the best way to sense or feel or register, you know, the synthesis of things. And DK said something to the effect of synthesis is. But it's all about, you know, being, and all of us being not only parts of that being, but we're the whole thing too. Synthesis is, but unity has to be created. And down here in the world of relativity, where everything looks different from everything else, we have at least have to achieve a harmony in our local environment and within ourselves, our limited selves. And over again, it seems, every time there's a new universe. There's something about the concrete mind of the human being that just does not want to break its ring pass knot. It's quite happy applying the fifth ray of concrete knowledge and the sixth ray of focused devotion. It's quite happy applying those rays in a limited and limiting way. And if you, but of course, it can't be allowed to go on that way, you know, because that's not the truth. So when you start to widen the concrete mind and break up or dissolve or whatever you do, break up its ring pass knot, there'll be a big resistance. And that resistance will come from those who depend upon the concrete mind and offer up such phrases as the inerrancy of the Bible or of any other holy book, the impossibility of error within a holy book. We know right away, as Alice Bailey knew, that when you get into translation issues, you can't talk about inerrancy. And DK, almost every other page is speaking in frustration, a nice kind of frustration, saying, okay, look, I'm so limited by words here. I just can't capture it. The best I can do is this. So we don't have inerrancy in anything that is presented to us through words. And that's we just have to understand that that is really the case. But we do have the energies. And the energies are always present, but they're not always registered. And if we learn how to register the energies, then we've stepped from mental intellection into triadal experience, imperience, whatever you want to call it. And that's a big step for the student of occultism. That's a big step. So I have a few things, I have some questions I want to ask you, and I have a few things to read, and just kind of the determination to go along with all this as best one can. You know, like I've showed you before, I think I have. Okay, categories. I mean, you know, I haven't even really studied this thing totally, and different subjects will be added to it, and it all looks a little bit abstract, but, you know, it's not entirely, and it's going to help you make an anchorage in the lower part of the spiritual triad and find your way into the intuition, which gives you that flash of certainty about things concerning which the mind can only reason. And it comes up with, well, looks like it, maybe yes, maybe no, you know. But there is what Master Moria calls straight knowledge. And this straight knowledge, okay, that's the real thing. And it goes on getting straighter and straighter from there. So we want to make the transition from reasoning, thinking, logic, you know, thinking about thinking, into direct perception. And that's what really makes an initiate, that direct perception. That's what we want. We want many things in the depth of ourselves, which the normally conscious mind may know nothing about. That's the whole thing. You know, we've got all these layers in our nature. But in the very depth of ourselves, we may not, we want certain things, and we don't even know what we want until it starts to register with us and we become kind of unhappy about what we know. So, as I say, this will take a while, and if you have the will to pursue the second curriculum of simplicity and being, then you can link it to your pursuit of relative truth. And that will be very good for you and for everyone you contact and everyone you teach or everyone, you know, with whom you share your life perspective. That's essentially what DK is doing. He's sharing that as he sees it. So every once in a while I'll send you these, you know, and I'll send you, as I have been, it's been a little difficult the last couple of weeks, last week maybe, haven't been able to make a lot of progress on it, but I will persist. So I want to welcome you, Annette, Antoinette, Asha, Brennan, Catherine, Damien, Francois, Frederick, Heike or Heike, Hideko, Ishtar, and Joe is on both sides of the fence here. Joe Waltz, one of our minders.
That is Jay.
That's Jay.
It's a different.
Oh, okay.
Jay, how okay. We should call that person. Yes.
Okay, but does that person speak with your voice?
It's not me. It's another real person.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, I'm all for real people until we discover how unreal people are, per se. But, okay, Jay, there we go. Karen, welcome. Kathy. And Leah, welcome. Loretta, Margot, Martha, and Mary, and Michael, and Nicholas, Stephen, Tia, Vicky, and Ivenica. Okay, and then Joe and I are over here on the other side, hoping to stay straight and get this to you. If we miss a program or two along the way, or they look mighty strange because of reception that's not great, you maybe just have to bear with us. Okay, now the first thing I want to do is before getting into a kind of reading for tonight, I want to know how your practice has been going. Have you been practicing identicality? Have you been practicing sameness? Have you been practicing infusception and pervasion? And that which generally negates the reality of form while not negating its actuality. I distinguish between those words, you know. There's been an act that has created all this form, and it's going on forever cyclically. And okay, you're always going to be dealing with form. But behind and within and surrounding and pervading is something else. And it's this something else, this otherness, which is sameness, which, you know, I'm trying to bring to the fore here in this kind of webinar, this kind of process, which, if all goes well, I will continue with. And even if there's nobody that attends, I'm one of those people, I just love talking to myself. So it'll continue one way or another. Okay, so how have you been doing? Anybody want to offer a thought, a question about your practice of this otherness. This, it's always there, but it's not formal. Anything coming up for you, any success, realization, you know, any ahas, I hear a voice.
Or see Ishtar's hand, and before she offers, and then we have a comment, I'll just share that the thing that I've noticed is how much is coming through at times unexpected in ordinary existence. The sort of beginning of some permeation into the unreal. So that is what I've noticed. And you have a hand, and you have a comment.
Or I almost might say a permeation into the real. Because, you know, what we're presented with all the time is actually, it's just a condition of consciousness. It is the unreal. It's a great multiple thought form of the great being. But when we can turn perception into infuseception, then it all begins to look fused, you know. So, but, you know, keep a little notebook on this stuff, maybe a separate little notebook. And as because DK really had people, you know, do their notebooks, you know. And when something comes up, which is from that realm, or you think it is, and it turns out to be either a profound thought, maybe, or an experience in periods, make a note. And then out of those many notes will come the possibility of doing this scientifically and at will. Okay. Thank you, Joe. And Ishtar, there you go.
Good morning or good evening. Oh, how are you all?
We are.
wonderful subject. Well, I have to say the most beautiful thing is to be present in every moment with nature and the animals and everything around you. And when you have that, I suppose you might call that old-fashioned devotion. You could call it appreciating, admiring, observing, and from that you see the wonderful creation that the infinite is, and from that you just have bliss. You know, you don't have to meditate. You can be driving in the car, you could be walking somewhere or just around people, and even admiring the many faces of the Creator in all of us, all different, beautiful.
Thank you. I'm remembering a book called Surprised by Bliss. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, the element of surprise is the thing that a lot of spiritual teachers talk about. They're not necessarily looking for the thing which triggers the realization. And I'm trying to think, was it... maybe it was Tsongkhapa, something like that, a great Buddhist scholar who was said to have been, in a way, an extension of the Buddha or overshadowed by the Buddha, and it was simply the common housefly that did it for him, you know. You know, suddenly, because, you know, when you have scales on your eyes, the scales are transparent. And you don't know that they're there until they lift. And then you say, well, what am I seeing now that I didn't see before, and why didn't I see it? So, you know, as you say, Ishtar, we have to – appreciation is a big thing. It's very close.
And do you think, Michael, that it's because, you know, how the rays are moving and rotating, they're not stagnant or standing still, that when we, as a small cosmos of the Creator, we focus on that high vibration of happiness and joyfulness and appreciation and gratitude attitude, we are actually tuning into the higher one? Do you think that could be the case?
I think yes. My quick answer on that is yes. There are all these multiple dimensions in cosmos, and he somehow tells us it's a 10-dimensional cosmos, and every one of those dimensions has a lot of subdivisions, so that when we're raising our vibration, we are beginning to see as the great ones see. Now, you know, yes. the Vedanta and Brahmanism and some of those disciplines, they go quite far. You know, they say whatever it is you see, whatever it is you register, it's splendid in its variety and is to be appreciated, and it's also the same. So that duality thing, where we're going to see the same and different, and you know, in Greek philosophy, it came down to that pretty much too, the same and different. And the Master Mori would say, you have to contain that. He's always asking us to contain certain things, you know. And that's one of the states of mind that from love and appreciation and the bliss and the thrill and all the things that are so desirable comes also this shock of identicality or shock.
Well, I tell you my real fly that set me off happened through a mantra.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then this other bliss has been a part before it and after it. But the main fly that switched me on was exactly that, a Deepak Chopra mantra. I am the gods, I am the demons. I am the gods, I am the demons. And at first, it's a horrifying thought. And for most people, it's like, I don't want to say that other part.
I understand.
You know, but for me, that was, and I guess like you said, everybody's path is different and what's going to set you off is going to be different. And when that happened, it was like a light bulb realization and a deep welling up of love and compassion for the demonic beings. And I say that because they are part of Creator too. Yeah, and until we accept that, we can look at it as being a naughty child, where the father and mother love them anyway, and a patient.
Mm-hmm. However you want to look at it, the essence is the same. Sometimes I, you know, along the same line, I look at people I love, you know, because I have really close connection with them, and they're part of what is called by Moria the near ones. So, you know, I try to stay neutral about it. I just get into the beingness of them. I don't give in to analysis of their qualities. I could from another point of view, but I just get into the beingness of them. Then I take a look, then I immediately transfer my imagination to the baddies. And the so-called baddies, you know, I take a look at Mr. Hitler that DK called a monster. I take a look at Mussolini and some of the other ones who seem to have no human feeling whatsoever. But I don't analyze their quality. I stay out of their quality, and I stay in their beingness, if you will. And I just know it all gets resolved. You know, this is a big drama. This is a play.
Yep.
You know, this is a dance. This is it's a great expression of creativity, and it will all resolve according to the archetype that set it all in motion. It'll be a long time. A long time.
Very true. So you're saying more about observing rather than judging.
I will not, in that state of mind, judge quality. That is for the curriculum of relativity, where One judges hierarchy and quality and all that. This is the curriculum of being, and being is the thing, and not the
That's good.
not the quality of any good guy, bad guy, you know, none of that. So, you know, we have to get used to it, I think, and the great ones that we call the great ones, you know, they would probably say, oh, we're just at the beginning. They've somehow managed to do this. So
yes, amazing.
Following in their footsteps. Yeah, well, thank you.
Yes, long way to go.
yes, and yet, I'm going to get into a thing with everybody at a time when I will try to demonstrate that no time has ever passed at all. Now, I know that sounds preposterous, but I will try to make that clear one fine day. There's so many wonderful subjects here. I almost don't know what to get into next, but that'll come along. Thank you, Ishtar.
Wonderful. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Now, let's see, Joe, okay, we have Asha. And there you go, Asha. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
You bet. Everything's fine.
It's kind of a confusing time. I get moments and glimpses when my vibration is high with very, very deep, sublime feelings and whatever, and I can be in the moment. And I'm not the master of that vibration. It's still circumstantial. I can be thrown off kilter pretty fast. I don't find I like crowds. To be honest, I wish I am actually more irritable and impatient. You would think I would be less, that I would be more in the oneness. But then I try not to judge myself and just like it is what it is. And maybe it's just something guiding me to not be in crowds, to not be in certain situations, and go back to my silence and solitude, which always helps me recoup. And nature, as the other person said, trees, nature, fresh air, sunshine, the sun always, sitting in the sun always nurtures and nourishes me. I find myself judging. I don't like to think much. I don't want to take classes. I'm actually way behind in my Mora Federation work, and I even thought of dropping out, but I'm going to keep on as a self-paced student. But I have no desire to actually study per se, except for something like this, identify as being. And almost like my mind, Tweezer once said it, I think two conferences ago in Arizona, about beheading the mind, and it got me when she said it. It's almost like, you know, you just I can put on that hat and do certain things. I have other things to attend to, and I can just put on that and then function at that level. And then when I come back to being me, I find I don't know, I'm kind of, it's a confusing time for me.
Okay, and it's quite honest kind of discussion here. And I would say that when you get into something that is well, you know, it's as ancient as it can be, but in a way, a direct and frontal approach to it is new for a lot of us, you know. So a confusion will result. You know, we cannot hope that we will keep all of this straight immediately. We do have to be patient. We do have to be patient with ourselves. And, you know, I can almost remember about 30 years ago, I ran into this book called the Viveka Kudamani, the crest jewel of discrimination, crest jewel of discrimination. I'm just going to mute this for a second here. It was a tiny little book, and I always carry it with me. And I wrote my Infinity book based on that. And ever since that has happened, cyclically, I've been at it again. And sometimes I really want to know everything that's in the universe, you know, like Master DK. He's a great academic. And other times, I, as you say, I want to know the essence of things. And basically what I'm trying to do is approach both simultaneously. I don't think it's easy for anybody, but I think that in the long run, that is what we have to do. We have to have illusion running simultaneously with reality, and we have to have a deep appreciation of both. And then, of course, just be very patient with ourselves, with this self that we're working here. Because look, we've dealt with this a long time, forever. Like, you know,
my mantra is like, I am eternal flame, and that's like the wave. Non-form part, and then the form part is light and love. That's what I've always aspired to be. And I was raised as a Hindu. I'm from India. So, you know, like Deepak Chopra, the previous person said, you know, I wrote it down, I am the gods and I am the demon. Evil didn't exist for me. You know, evil did not have its own. It was the absence of good. That's how I was raised. So, to deal with that. But anyway, thank you for this, because this is what I really feel is a very accelerated way through this into realizing the absolute.
Yes, and I can only say yet again, you know, yet again. We're in a way we're very practiced with this, but it's always a new universe. It's always a new archetype. It's always a new algorithm, even if it's the same being. So, you know, that's the thing. There's only one being. You can't say, look, every universe has a universal logos. It does, with certain limitations and with certain things to do and to unfold. However, the being behind every one of those universal gods is the same, and we'll discover one day again who that is. Okay, Asha, I appreciate your thought, and thank you. Let's see now, who else, if anybody else want to talk about their how they're doing with their practice. You know, look, it's just like the Jesuits. It's true that you can be surprised by, you know, like, oh my God, you know. Well, you're surprised by God, you know. There's an old saying by the mystics, and I'm going to kind of butcher it a bit, but here's the idea that I'll say it in my own way, that a fly in God is worth infinitely more than a palace or a castle outside of God. And go ahead.
You have a comment that Frederick had put in quite a while ago, and you have two hands, Damien and Tia.
Okay, so let me look for the comments. Are these comments in God? Okay, let's see where I am here. And how shall I, here's Frederick. Okay, right. Okay, Frederick. I'll take it as it comes here, Frederick. Right, just listening to our soul, which of course is another self. And a higher one, a higher power, it's us, you know, it's we. It's, we think it's something else, and at first it seems to be, but it's not. Soul awareness messages coming up from our inner perception as an intuitive intuition process. And, you know, in the end of the first chapter in A Treatise on White Magic, he says, you get these waves. They are coming from the solar angel, or the angel of the presence. That's the way the angel raises the human being it is supervising. And then he says something a little bit appalling. He says, but you all meditate so little and so irregularly that you're not there for the reception of those currents of upliftment given by the angel. So, you know, there was a reason with the seventh ray, I suppose, that he really did insist on regular meditation. And thank you all. You know, it's a group process, and I think what we're going to discover is as we kind of, you know, take off our rings past not, as we do that, we're just going to discover that we are each other. Now, you know, some people will say, well, look, I'm me and you're you, and I don't want to be you and you don't want to be me. And it kind of looks at the monad as a granularity. I hope I'm being clear about that, as if it's just a isolated point of view, as Leibniz maybe would have said. His view on the monad was this more isolated point of view, a granularity very high, but still not fusing. Now, you know, maybe I've told you this story, but when I was a kid, I liked to go to the dining room table and break thermometers. Why would I do that? Because I loved the mercury in all those little beads, how they got close enough to each other, bloop, and they would amalgamate. And by the time I was finished, all those little beads of mercury, of course, it's a little dangerous now. You know more about mercury poisoning. Maybe I've been poisoned by mercury. I don't know. I have the highest planet in my chart. But by the end of it all, it was all just one lump of mercury because there had been an amalgamation. Now, I kind of look at that as a symbol for what happens to us as we ascend. You know, if I look at this thing from the Theosophist with Parabrahm, that's basically what you see, seven into one, seven into one, seven into one, until all the sevens go into one, and that one goes into a three, and the three, you know, becomes one. And okay, so basically that is what happens. And I think we just need the experience. Imperience, I like better maybe, although it's a little strange. We need the imperience of becoming each other. Now, we're not really becoming each other. We are already each other. And that, you know, and people will fight like blazes, you know, just to keep that from happening. As a matter of fact, a lot of the politics of the present day is the warfare between the people that want to stay very much their isolated personality and gratify it, and those who are already through sympathy and suffering, reaching out to others and finding that they have such a sympathy, empathy, that they might as well be the other person. And that's what the Christ basically was teaching. So that's an amazing thing, I think, and we have to learn along the way. Now, so thank you, Frederick, for those thoughts. And then here's Tia. I've been practicing identicality, sameness, and infusive. Those are the big words, you know, in my book, through my heart. Mm-hmm, right. What I have experienced is a pull between the solar plexus and the heart when I make the conscious effort to shift perception. I hope this will diminish over time, and I will start an intuitional process, it looks like here. Hold on just a second. I'm just trying to get this. And I will, is that word start, Joe? I think so. In the heart. Unfortunately, I'm having a little trouble with my screen, and I can't see all the words. But I get the idea. I get the idea, even in the form of words, is not exactly correct. Now, Alice Bailey also, what she was recapitulating in her life, I think she was recapitulating the second initiation, she had a great pull between the heart and the solar plexus. And that the ascending of solar plexus energy to the heart is the battle. And it ends up producing a lot of love. It ends up producing the elimination of a lot of glamours and a more mental focus. I won't call it a mental polarization. That's a different thing, and it seems to happen after that experience of going into the desert and fighting the world, the flesh, and the devil, and conquering them all. Then we're really, really on the path of initiation. But it's a mental focus, and it has to do with spiritual intelligence and mental illumination. So if we really get that solar plexus energy, you know, moving from the passionate to the compassionate, and from the preacher to the teacher, and, you know, all those funny ways of describing it, we will also have a more illumined mind. And that is what we want to really prove by the time we reach the third degree. When I look at the people who were working with the Tibetan, there was very few, in my view, anyway, I can only offer you that, who had reached the third degree. I think definitely Alice Bailey, and I think definitely Roberto Assagioli and some others were on the way and pretty close. He took a lot of attention to the people who were passing through the second degree or could. He gave them hints and pieces of advice, and some of them succeeded and some of them did not, because it's no easy thing to enter the stream. But that mental state of light is what we, yes, as you say, Frederick, that's right. Mental illumination by our inner awareness. Where else can it come from, you know? We are that light. We are that love, and we are that will, and we even more are that being out of which light, love, and will emerge. So we have to be very sensitive inwardly, and we will manage. You know, we will manage. And above all, you know, we keep on keeping on, as they say in the Arcane School, and we apply pressure to ourselves in a way that we can stand, because you don't want to apply so much pressure that your instrument falls apart, you know. But everything is done in the noble middle path, which finally leads right into Shambhala. Okay, so I see here is Heike, and I'm going to take yours in just a second, Heike. I want to take Damien over here, who's been kind of waiting a while. And so you're self-muted, Damien, and if you would press that and turn green, there you go.
Hi, Michael. Hi. I was just thinking you were asking about sameness, now, which I've been at a very long time in earthly terms. But I suppose in the last couple of weeks, what I've noticed, and it's a strange thing to get used to, it's like a softness, a gentleness, and a strength.
Mm.
What I've been actually experiencing. And it's what's actually I'm seeing and feeling when I'm just out and about. And it's, yeah, I'm pretty sensitive, but this has been pretty strong now in the last couple of weeks, which is interesting. The thing about identification, that's strange and kind of a contradiction for me. What I have been bringing up now has been, it's like I'm touching off something that I can't recognize and I can't touch, right? And I've noticed it's been bringing up anger and a certain amount of fear, which I don't judge, but I find it very interesting. It's like there's this huge contradiction going on at the moment. Like when I'm out and about, as I said, I feel this, and I actually see people in a different light, and it's like a strength and a softness all rolled into one. And then I have this thinking and pondering on identifications. And I was just wondering. Also, because of the time that we're in and the impact the earth is having at this point in time, energy is coming in. I find in dreams, they do be crazy at times. And it's, all this going on. So it's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you have to find the word and the subject that suits you. When I ran into the word identification, right away I stopped using the word with. In other words, you know how we do identification with this, with that, with it. I said, wait a second. I'm expressing polarity right there, and I substituted the word as, and I wanted to see whether it gave me more that, you know, slipping in and becoming or recognizing that I already was. And I found that, in fact, it was so. At the same time, you know, we are, when we do all this, we're in the curriculum of the monad. Now, I'm not saying we're there yet, okay, or anything like that. But when you have that particular type of essence firing away, it's going to bring up whatever else is in the aura down there, the bottom, whatever. It's going to bring it right up, you know. So we have to expect that. We got to expect it. And Aries, Pluto, Shambhala, okay? And that's one of those triangles. Now, we know that before the reappearance of the Christ, we have a big Pluto event. It's in the astrology book right around 70 and 71. And Vulcan, for the spiritual will and also for the higher, still higher will, is coming in. Pluto drags it up, and Vulcan forces the will into the cleansed situation. So, you know, I remember when I first started working with Jungian psychology 50 years ago, maybe. Longer.
I've read it.
You know what I mean? And I tell you what, I was recording stuff, and I was sleeping with my tape recorder. You know, and of course, it wasn't a wonderful night's sleep, but every time anything happened, blah, 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 you know, and then I'd write it all up for the...
I'd done that myself, yeah.
You know, psychologists that I'm working with. And a lot of Plutonic stuff. I said, where is this coming from? So I realized I was scrounging around on the bottom of my aura, and it was going to come up, you know. And then I just had to accept it without, you know.
Well, that's what I do,
I've been there, okay. And it's pretty, sometimes pretty ugly and all the rest of it. But I know.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Just one thing that actually happened to me, actually twice, once last week, this week. Don't know where this came from. And I said, where is this anger coming from? And I heard a voice, and I don't know where the voice came from. No, it wasn't from my brain. I absolutely know that. You couldn't handle it before now. That's what came in.
Well, that's...
Which I thought was interesting.
And I think it's true. You know, we're never given anything along the positive side, if we're really an aspirant and a disciple, that we cannot handle. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we cannot
handle,
you know. I'm remembering the unhappy, is it unhappy, story of T. Suba Roe, who was equal in development to Blavatsky. And, you know, he was eager, first-rate type, and he asked his guru, you know, whoever that was, I want you to precipitate all of my human karma. Oh, boy. Well, it's a daring thing, he said. And the master said, well, are you sure? He says, this is what I want. And then, well, down it came, you know, and he got this deadly, horrible disease, Hodgkin's disease. You know how bad that can be. It's really horrible. Mm-hmm. And he died. And who's to say? You know, he got it. He bit the bullet. He got it out of the way. But sometimes when you ask for something, even before it normally would have been given, because you could really handle it, it comes.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. So we have to be careful.
What you ask for.
I wonder if I asked for this. Anyway, it can happen. So, okay, Damien. Yeah. So, you know, it's an experiment. It's all an experiment. And we don't really know, because we're all unique, except we're all the same. We're the same and unique. And we don't know how it will occur for us, but we know that the Antikarana is unique for everybody. And your method of descent into ever lessening is unique for everybody. So, mm-hmm. so we just have to be very aware and go with it, and not be afraid. Just go with it, you know.
Okay.
Strange things will happen. Okay. Okay, Damien. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Now let's see here. Now, so here was Heike.
Tia.
Tia? Did I miss Tia? I thought I...
Okay. All right. Helke? Heike?
Heike. Looks like it. Tia, but Tia's... Yeah. I did get Tia, at least what she wrote. But it said that, you know, okay, there we go. But now she wants to speak, and I'll get to you, Heike, right away. Okay, Tia, are you... You are self-muted. There you go. Go ahead, please. Did you want to speak something? If you did, then you can. And if your writing was what you wanted to say, then that's okay, too. Okay, well, maybe... Uh-huh. Okay. Well, yeah, you're green. Here, in this particular case, green is good, you know? Okay. Tia, anything you want to say there? Or if not, maybe it'll come through a little later. Okay, I don't think I'm missing anything. Tia is green and she could speak if everything is working properly, but maybe it's not entirely. All right, we'll leave that on for a little while and see how that works for you, Tia. Now for Heike, let's see what we say here. She says... I could refer to two kinds of being in my experiences. One kind was I experienced with a friend full of problems and needs, and in a sudden moment I was just like a channel of all-inclusive love towards her, which came, unexpectedly. There was none of the usual mind chatter in me. Equally unexpected happens something in nature. Okay, and this is, someone brought that up just earlier. For example, a tree, looking at it, I suddenly don't just see it from outside. Yes, very important. It's part of the contemplative attitude. And the highest level of contemplation is called samadhi. And they even divide it up, you know, into different types of samadhi, and I suppose a planetary logos or a solar god, they have their own kind of samadhi, I suppose. It just keeps going. I can feel it, you say, and with that comes knowing without thinking. Okay, and that's what Master Moria calls straight knowledge. And maybe that's what the Tibetan calls pure reason. Okay. Yeah, okay, so inside, I suddenly don't just see it from the outside. That's right, to see within, okay, that is real contemplation, but from the inside in the energy, I can feel it, and with that comes knowing without thinking about it. Now, that's straight knowledge, and that's, you know, that's one of those things we're after, and it is an aspect of the intuition. There is then a kind of fusion. Is that what it says here? And am I missing this, Joe, where there's more written? I'm not sure. This is all I can get right now.
I can't see any more either.
Okay, it looks like fusion. And wait a second. I'm having trouble going down. It's also written below, but I can't get those words. But it looks like the word fusion. And if there's more written after that, I just can't get it. Unless, Heike, you want to say something about it. Because right now I'm cut off with what looks like the word fusion. I'm agreeing with everything you've said here. Let us learn to, as if, see from the inside out and not be blocked by the ring pass knot of the being. Now, Christ was never blocked. He knew what was in man, and he probably knew what was in many kingdoms of nature. He was like Neptune. He could flow in, he could pervade, he could get beyond the boundary. Get beyond the boundary. See, now when we talk about the very first fundamental of the secret doctrine, we're talking about the boundless immutable principle. There's no boundaries there, okay? And that's the amazing thing. The minute you eliminate boundaries, you eliminate space. And I suppose eventually you eliminate time. We'll talk about that. And for the absoluteness, there is no space and time. I know some people have used a blank page that is totally black to describe the absolute, but I don't think so. I think space is no more. Nothing that we can depict. Maybe we can somehow symbolize it, but I'm not sure space is good when we're talking about that which is boundless. Because if it's boundless, there's nothing else, you know. So what are you talking about? Extension in nothing else? No, it doesn't really work that way, I think. Okay, well, thank you for your thoughts. I think they describe a kind of perception that comes upon you and comes upon us, and you're verging very close there to the idea of the samadhi, the idea of deep contemplation. It's not like meditation. With meditation, you have the meditator, you have that on which things are meditated, and then you have the process of meditation. But with contemplation, no. Contemplation, the soul, we're merging with, we're told, with the meditation of the soul when we're truly contemplating. Template. Maybe we're reaching the archetype more and more. You should, maybe some of you have seen those old pictures, Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. They were part of a group in India in the late 19th century, and there was this picture, photography, because photography had come in, And there was this picture of Ramakrishna in a state of bliss. He looked like one happy man, you know, and he was so blissed out that he couldn't even stand. People had to, his students had to kind of hold him up. You know, he was a high initiate, and he had this ability, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, you know, sometimes it's difficult. I fail to discriminate rightly between Ramana Maharshi and Ramakrishna. Of course, you know, Maharshi came a little later. But he had these kind of dances. And in the dance or movement came what's called Shaktipat. And it meant you touch another person and the Shakti, the power, is conveyed. Now, take a look over here. Here's, just to get an idea, Shaktis are pretty, here it is, pretty strong. So, you know, Parashakti, Supreme Energy, Kriya Shakti, that's how you materialize new vehicles, Jnana Shakti, the force of mind, Mantrika Shakti, the word made flesh or speech, Ichha Shakti, the will to manifest. It's kind of interesting, the German word Ich for I is in there, and Kundalini Shakti, energy of form or matter, and then there's no Shakti down here with the lowest of the hierarchies. But he would, it wasn't just unconscious dancing for him. He would assess the condition of the of his students, and the ones that could be touched were touched, and the ones that could not yet be touched because they weren't ready were not touched. And so, you know, it was like a tremendous jolt of electricity when they were touched, and everything changed for them. Well, you know, sometimes those teachers, they show up, and you can be associated with them out of long karma. And maybe his foremost disciple was Vivekananda. Vivekananda, you know, who came to the 1893 Columbian Exposition in Chicago. I used to go to that museum quite a bit, but it's an old building, you know, and it all started with the big exposition, and he just arrived in his orange robe, and somehow everybody recognized him, and he got taken care of and taught a lot of people. Okay, well, I don't know how I got wandering off on that, but anyway, I did. And let's see now. We have Michael, and I just want to find out over here from Tia, now that that phone thing is over now. Was there anything that you wanted to say? Yeah, now you're green. You're green. You're green. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes, indeed.
I just wanted to tell you, thank you so much for offering all of these courses. I have found them tremendously helpful.
Thank you.
And one of the unexpected byproducts of this meditation is I think that it has allowed me to become even more loving and more compassionate. And I'm very, very happy about that. I know, and as I mentioned before, I know that there's resistance within me that I have to deal with, but as I have worked with the Moria Federation, that resistance, I'm learning how to deal with it and manage it. So I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Thank you, Tia. And that's a very desirable objectives being achieved, you know, because the big theme on our planet right now is love. And if our identification as being can produce more of the right kind of love and unity, then there's a very practical effect occurring. And I think every one of us, as we touch the higher parts, will evoke what is not yet quite redeemed within us. It's just how it happens. I remember when I went to the Arcane School and I worked there for 5 years, and that was back in 1980. Sometimes I'd get in the meditations and these thoughts would come. My God, where did they come from? They were not the thoughts I wanted. But I realized that I was touching higher places and spaces, and the unredeemed stuff was just being evoked. It was just being called forth. So that goes with it. I went through a period of my life that way. It was kind of a cleansing, you know, and then it stopped, and one was through it, you know. So I think we can all expect that kind of thing. Thank you, Tia. I appreciate your thoughts. And I hope, you know, obviously there's a lot of ups and downs in the sign Aquarius, as the Tibetan says, the hill and the valley experience, the sunny hilltop and the depths of the valleys, you know, all those things we're going to experience, and we will eventually achieve in the astral body that kind of tranquility that allows the real intuition to enter, and instead of the astral vicissitudes, you know, up and down, I know this, you know, what that's all about. If you're Ray 4 and you have a lot of Aquarius, you know what it's all about. So anyway, okay, thank you. And let's see. Okay. Now, here is Michael. And it's the mosaic idea. In the life between lifetimes, could we know as we are known before descent into fractured form? Could we function as colored glass or silvered mirrors as rays of light transit our translucent hearts until born together as a cosmic pattern, a mosaic of the celestial eye? It's very poetic, and, you know, it has a lot in it, what you're saying here. The celestial eye, I guess we all have our place in the celestial eye. And if you look in the A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, by the way, which I hope to find the right day for. Meanwhile, if you go to Makara, you know, I've done a few solo webinars there to keep us moving forward. So, in a way, the Cosmic Fire material is underway. It's going. And I'll work it out with Tuya when our good times. I found myself doing 3 webinars a day, and the people around me far and wide felt that might be just a little much. But, you know, I have this mantra that I work with. Anything worth doing is worth overdoing. And not everybody agrees with me. So, okay, we'll try to find the time when we can get together, maybe every other week for discussion, and then every other week or just some making of videos and things you can study. So will we come all the way back in a way? Could we know as we are known? Well, you know, my impression about that is that we definitely ascend to the top of a certain sine curve, but that the ascent continues for a long, long time to be ever higher. So I think we're doing well to ascend into the consciousness of the soul, solar angel, egoic lotus, causal body. I think we're doing well there. I don't know that we can ever, and here I may have you wrong, but, you know, reach to the very heights of possible perception in the universe to know ourselves as we are known. But in a way that's true, because using soul consciousness in general, the masters know us in a certain way, and we rejoin the causal body, at least some of us do, and get the perspective on the life that maybe they had. So I think, yes, you know, it's the, yeah, it's, it, you know, you're kind of hinting here. This is the Shelley quote, life is a dome of many splendored glass, or many colored glass, something like that, stains the white radiance of eternity. So definitely a higher perspective is ours, and the question is, how far can this go? And then our whole work is to transfer or reorganize the mosaic world, which is at first pretty unconscious and a little bit chaotic, into the archetypal world, so that the mosaic worlds, and who knows where that really begins, you know, I mean, in one way we can say it's the lower 18 subplanes, or maybe the lower 21 subplanes, and maybe it's the whole cosmic physical plane. It depends on what we mean by mosaic, but I think our first experience with mosaic divisions that have to be made into one image, an archetypal image, is with the lower 18 subplanes. So that's a big job to transform, and that's where all the good and evil comes in, and the high and the low, and the pairs of opposites, as we work in this split-up world to make a unity out of it according to the directing archetype for ourselves, for the planet, for beyond and beyond, and finally for the whole universe. But it is beautifully expressed, and thank you, Michael, for that. And my only question is how far we go between lives. I think we come to the top of a sine wave, but that sine wave, in my view, reaches only so far and probably deals at first with the higher mental plane. Later, between lives, although there won't be so many of the normal lives left, the monad, or one of the aspects of the spiritual triad, may indicate the top of the sine wave. And, you know, the interesting thing is the bigger the wave, the lower it goes. So you can kind of understand how much work the masters will have to do as they reach toward Shambhala and walk the earth in their Maya Virupa will-created body at the same time. Thank you. Here's Loretta. Often I feel a something, yet if I think about it too much, that's so true. It eludes me. It's almost like it does not want to be captured. Well, you know, have you read, maybe you have, The Labors of Hercules by Alice Bailey? And she kind of, she passed on before that could really be finished, but the Tibetan had been writing the myths out, and they are wonderful the way he did it. He went up to myth number 7, and Alice Bailey's interpretations accompanied him up to number 6. And then after that, well, you know, people did the best they could, but it was no longer the Tibetan writing the myth. Starting with Scorpio, it was a mythologist, and I think a very accomplished person by the name of Francis Merchant. And sometimes what was offered were old essays of Alice Bailey, which were pertinent, you know. Up to that time, she was able to write actual commentaries, as far as I know, but here we come to number 4, the capturing of the golden hind, the doe, the elusive deer, that is supposed to be brought to the temple of Apollo. The trouble is, everybody going after the deer, well, they might capture it, but and they bring it to the temple of Apollo, and the next thing they look, it's out on the hillside again, ready to be to give others inspiration, because nobody owns it. So it's a very elusive symbol. I mean, it's a symbol for the elusive intuition. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's always there. You try to corral it. You try to bring it back. You try to put it in a place from which it cannot escape. Zoop, and there it goes again. And so I think you're right. And I would say that the golden hind does not want to be captured. Does not want to be captured. I'll tell you what. So it's a very different look at the sign Cancer. And when you think about the main rulers of Cancer, it's not only the moon, it's Neptune. And Neptune is slippery. It is much related to the whole liquidity of water. And Neptunian people can slip away from being cornered. And it's interesting how Pisces and Neptune are used together. And to a certain extent, Cancer and Neptune also. So I think you're right about this. And I had an experience once, how some of us, we wake up on the other side. And you're sleeping. Apparently you're sleeping and you suddenly wake up. Okay, what's going on here? And you come to yourself and you say, well, let's just say you better be a little bit passive. Otherwise, you're going to kill it. Now, immediately when I saw where I was, what I was doing, I had certain things in mind I wanted to do, that I willed to do. And I applied the will to the moment and said, let's go. And the whole thing just went poof. It just disappeared because of my too strenuous application of the will and the directorship of the process. So if you ever wake up on the other side, kind of just let it unfold so that one sees maybe where the process wants to take you, and then you will not kill the possibilities through too much directed energy. Later, I'm sure one can do what one wishes. But, in the beginning, you have to be careful. Otherwise, you just make it all disappear. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I want to put Tuya over here on the other side in case she wants to speak. Okay, good. Thank you. Now, Joe, who am I missing? Anybody, or is everything okay? I'm missing you.
I'm thinking it's looking good.
Okay.
Not seeing any hands or any more questions.
Okay, and Tuya's been very busy here, but Tuya, is there anything you would like to say? I don't know. Maybe not. Yes, you're green. Go ahead.
Okay. Life is wonderful.
Oh, that sounds good to me, but you see, that's the amazing thing, that admiration for the process. DK says we have, humanity has, and then he really describes it, the habit of misery. Now, what a thought. Humanity is the victim of the habit of misery. Maybe it's what it takes to be on this hospital of a planet. And we don't approach it with, wow, what a wonderful life, And I think there's a movie about that with Jimmy Stewart or something. I don't know. Way, way back. But it has to do with love and appreciation and say, this is a miracle. And, I don't know how many of us disciples are in that, but I certainly see the two years quite frequently. So it's like a code word for me when she says it's a wonderful life.
It is wonderful life, and that's why I want to remind us about the festival week of Nukropovo servers, and welcome to Finland.
Yeah, for 1 week we'll be holding a little gathering here in the Temple of Silence with academic work and meditation and ritual work at night and so forth. And so if people are think they might be interested in celebrating this once every 7 years festival week, starting from the 21st of December, and probably we'll be celebrating together the winter solstice or the Capricorn solstice. Let's talk about it that way. Please let Tuya or me know. You know, and I'm infinitize8@gmail.com. Maybe you know my address. And Tuya is tuya.s.robbins@gmail.com. So, yeah, we'd like to hear from you if you think you might be interested in the adventure. In Finland, in the middle of winter, it's not as bad as you think. I mean, it's pretty close to the water, so I'd say North Dakota and Minnesota and Wisconsin are a lot colder. Anyway. All right. So that's that. And I think just a little bit more. Wait a second. Heike, yeah, we got you. And did I get Loretta? Yes, I think so. Yes. And Michael, yes. Yes. Okay. And others of you spoke up, and I was grateful for that. That's excellent. Well, look, there's just a lot of material, and let's see what happens next Tuesday. We have Tuesday is usually one of our days off, but the late broadcast seems to suit people. It's not too late here in Europe. It's good in the United States, and people may have awakened in Australia and New Zealand. It seems to be okay. So I'm not going to get into, I have to be careful how much overloading might happen. I'm going to wait till the next time to practice some of this. And it actually comes out anyway. And I'll be sending you a new my ongoing work with the different words. The words are concepts. They are concepts for ideas, and the ideas represent states of awareness and being. That's where we have to go with it. So keep practicing. It doesn't take long. It can be quick. You know, 5 minutes will do it, even 2 minutes. Just summon through your heart whatever word works for you. If identification doesn't work for you, then use something else, you know. Infusception, sameness, identicality, pervasion, you know. They all have that formless presence, and that's another great word, presence. The Jesuits, you know, they practice the presence of God. And that's a huge idea and a very, very deep possibility. So I just want to close by doing something. Just a little slight reflection. Okay. Just want us to use our imagination to visualize someone or something. And then we don't dwell on the fact that they are different than we are. We don't dwell on the form aspect at all. We can take in a couple of other someones or something if we want to. We just search, allow in that very subtle thing. That subtle formless infusivable presence, you know, like from the bottom of the heart in a way. And no matter what little aggregation you use, whether it's just one of something, a thing, a person, or two or three, don't get stuck on the form. Forms are different, and there's other times to deal with the form. But it's a little like, no matter what form your imagination presents to you, you overpower it in a way with isness. Which is absolutely identical in the case of anything you can perceive. At our level, it's mostly perception. At the level of the higher beings in cosmos, it's almost always infusception. And we're trying to imitate that. Don't let the ugly repel you. Don't let the beautiful attract you. It's a different kind of exercise. When you're dealing with relativity, then you can go into all the normal things of the good and evil and attractive and repulsive and good and bad and all that. And it's sometimes hard to detach your consciousness from quality. Remember, life, quality, appearance. Right away, at our stage of evolution, you want to start looking at the qualities. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it high? Is it low? What is it? You want to analyze. You want to take it apart. But just you know, tune in on this isness, which is sameness, and dwell not only with it, but as it. And pretty soon, you know, you're going to be the actor and the subject of anything that's ever happened. It's a stretch, I know, but it's an expansion. also. Now I think I got a freeze here. I can't do much with it. So let's just close with a great invocation. And, you know, in this context of being. And let's see if I can control alt delete, see if I can do anything there. And yeah, maybe. Okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, thank you very much. Tomorrow morning, we have our morning schedule. We'll work on triangles in the morning at 5 a.m. GMT, and at night it'll be the science of triangles, which is maybe a more academic, approach. But we'll be quite into triangles by the time we finish our Wednesday, which, by the way, is a Mercury day. And if you think about the triangles and its relationship to Mercury and its powerful third ray up at the top of its being, it fits to have it on a Wednesday. There's not much we're going to be able to do. There's one day that we're going to miss, and that's traveling back to the south, and that would be the morning, Sunday morning, of tracting finances for hierarchical purposes. So, Tuya and I are very grateful that you can attend some of these, and we will just keep going as long as we can, because persistence is a great it's a great virtue. So, lots of love and many blessings, and we'll be with you before long, according to what you can what you can attend. Okay. Bye-bye for now.